Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, well, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Richard Mantkemeyer, and we're going to be talking about preparedness, at least for the first half hour of this hour. And we've got a great program lined up the second hour. You certainly won't want to miss it when we have Pastor Joe Schimmel talking about they sold their souls for rock and roll. But with Richard, we're going to be talking about preparing. Now, we, I believe, live in very uncertain times. I talked to some fellow just this last week who lives in Southern California. And, you know, the majority of the city of Los Angeles today is Hispanic. And there's nothing wrong with Hispanics. There are a lot of good people. But a great many of these people are here illegally in this country. And they've come here for jobs, and jobs are available. But what happens as the economy slows down, as I really believe it will, and suddenly we find up to 20 million illegal aliens living in this country that can't get jobs, or they're competing with legal aliens and American citizens for those jobs. I mean, are we moving towards the same sort of instability they had in France here just a few weeks ago, where there was mass pillaging and where there was burning of cars and burning of homes and burning of businesses and burning of cars? About 9,000 to 10,000 cars were burned. And it wasn't just in France. It was all, not just in Paris. It was really all over France. Are we moving towards problems as far as, certainly as far as access to energy is concerned? And will we see rising cost of utilities, and will we see rising costs of the various things we need in the way of gasoline and heating oil and natural gas, all of these things going up? And will this impact on our economy and begin to lower our living standards? And what will be the attitude of the people at that time? Are we moving towards a nuclear war? And if you're reading very carefully, as I do, the material that's coming out of the Asia Times, the India Times, Reuters out of Europe, why, everything points to the fact that there may well very soon be some sort of an attack on Iran to try to stop them from developing nuclear weapons. And Iran already has a certain number of warheads, nuclear warheads they bought elsewhere. And, of course, they've been purchasing intermediate-range ballistic missiles from North Korea and elsewhere. Certainly, Russia has just agreed to sell Iran $1 billion of anti-aircraft weapons. Of course, they're only defensive weapons. Who do you think they're going to be shooting those anti-aircraft missiles at? Are they going to be shooting at planes that are coming in from their neighbors in Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan? Or are they going to be shooting them at Israeli and American warplanes? I think we live in very uncertain times. And with that as the background, Richard, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. It's always an honor to be on your program with you.
Well, what are your thoughts on what's going on in the world today? Do you think we live in an uncertain world?
I think that would be an understatement, wouldn't it?
a gross understatement.
See, after your introduction, I think I'm going to go buy some more food.
Well, Richard Bennett, how long have you been at the game of providing survival equipment for people?
We've been helping Americans prepare for most any emergency that may come their way for over 32 years now. And we do encourage people to be responsible, to be aware, and be prepared. And as you just so elegantly stated, there are so many things going on that we have to contend with nowadays. It's a little bit overwhelming, but I always encourage people to start somewhere, prepare, continuously prepare, and add to your food preparations.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Richard Mantkemeyer. Go ahead, Richard. Just pick up the story from there.
So anyway, at the Survival Center, we've been helping people prepare for most any emergency that may come their way for over 32 years. We wrote a very excellent book that is very simple. It almost takes you by the hand and leads you through the steps of getting prepared. It's called Basic Preparedness. And I encourage everyone to get a book, whether you are a beginner at this or even an expert. I'm sure you're going to find some things in it that will help you prepare. We always encourage people to do the first four basics of survival, which are food, water, medical, and shelter. And it just happens to be the first four chapters of our book. We thought it was so important that we covered the basics, and then the rest of the book deals with other items you will need to be aware of to continue on in your preparedness program. And we're so happy that we get a chance to talk to some of the listeners that listen to you, Dr. Stan. They sure speak very highly of you.
Well, I thank you for that, and we always try to be fair with our listeners. And I should mention to our listeners that Richard does help support Radio Liberty. But certainly, as we begin looking at what's going on, a lot of things people don't think about. Now, I don't know whether there's going to be a problem as far as the bird flu is concerned. Maybe they're just scaring us to death. I do know that we have laboratories that are producing new and lethal diseases, and any of you would like to see that testimony by Dr. David MacArthur back in 1969, where he asked for $10 billion from the Congress to create a new disease for which there'd be no immune response. And then he went on to say, some people, we shouldn't think the military should be producing a disease like this because it's another means of mass killing, but of course we want the money anyway. And 10 years later, of course, we had the first cases of acquired immune deficiency disease. And homosexuals were foolish enough to take an experimental hepatitis B vaccine, and 75% of them came down with AIDS. Isn't that amazing? And why doesn't anybody ever tell you that? Well, that's another issue. But I really do believe that whether it be a biological attack or a chemical attack or civilian unrest in this country, I believe that we really have to start being prepared, and we're going to have to be able to look after ourselves. So certainly food and water and medical supplies and shelter, those would be the four big things.
That's what we always tell people, to start there, because if you don't do those four, you don't have to worry about much of anything else. And a lot of people say, well, you know, should I buy gold or silver? And I say, yes, that's very important. I have some, but you got to stop and think about it. If you can't buy anything with that gold, what value is it? In fact, what could become more valuable than gold? And I think long-term storage food could be, food that will last. And you mentioned about the bird flu. I have headlines here from Associated Press where the feds could restrict travel with the bird flu strikes.
Hold that thought for just a moment as we bring our other stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Richard is saying that the four things that people really need would be food, water, shelter, and medical supplies, and he's written a book going into the background of that. And as I mentioned, Richard does help support Radio Liberty, and we always enjoy having him on because he's been at this business. You've been at this longer than anybody else has, haven't you?
It's well, business probably today. Not quite as long as you have, but
no, but I mean as far as in your business getting preparedness supplies.
Yes, we've been at this since the mid-70s. In fact, in the late 70s, we started building underground shelters, which is one of our big projects nowadays, is to supply underground shelters to America. We think that's one of the best ways to protect ourselves from most any catastrophe that may come along. In fact, I was just reading a report today where these scientists down at Georgia Tech are saying that worldwide, the number of strongest hurricanes, those are categories 4s and 5s, have nearly doubled over the past 35 years. And that the rise in deadly storms since 1995 has researchers worried about the future. And we always tell people, well, don't worry, just get prepared. I mean, you know, you can sit around and worry, or you can be active and get yourself prepared, take responsibility, because it is about our future. And as Dr. Stan has so eloquently alluded to, the fact that, you know, that it looks like there's a lot of trouble on the horizon. We've already seen the major disasters on the planet, three of them within the last year. That the wise and prudent person would be really preparing heavily today. And when we don't know how to encourage people any more than that, saying we really need to be prepared. And if they would quarantine a family or an area or a city, that you need to be able to be self-sufficient for yourself. And we're suggesting a good 1 to 2 years would be a place to start.
Well, I think that's a little hard for the average individual to fathom that anything could be like this. But if you're reading what they're really talking about, and as I say, I am not saying we're going to have the bird flu. I'm not saying we're not going to. I will say that I believe that they have special divisions, secret parts of government that have created a number of deadly new diseases, both fatal diseases and chronic diseases. And we see chronic fatigue syndrome, a new disease, 2 billion people, chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. Sort of lump them together, and then we see all the people, about 1 million people with Lyme disease, an entirely new disease. Where did it come from? Nobody knows, but they want to assure you this is not made in some laboratory someplace. Although we do actually have the writings of Zygmunt Brzezinski, and if you ever want to see them, I'll send you the page. He's writing in 1970 in his book Between Two Ages, and he's talking about how in the future, and he's quoting some other fellow who says, you know, we'll be able to create not only storms and droughts, we'll be able to create chronic diseases and disable the enemy, so they'll be forced to surrender. And, of course, who is the enemy? Certainly, Brzezinski and the elite that he is involved with would consider people like you and me the enemy, wouldn't they? Well, be that as it may, I think that we really have to start thinking about what you would need. Now, you do make shelters. Do many people actually buy those shelters?
Well, you know, it's not our hottest item, but it's one of the best shelters built on this planet at this time. We put 30-some years of research into it. We do have above-ground shelters that people can get very reasonable for the price of, you know, not even a good used car. And then we also have ones that we can retrofit inside a home and or an apartment. So we do have options for almost any budget. And talking about storing food for long periods of time, we know it's a little bit of a challenge to maybe put it all up at once. But, you know, if you start somewhere, you just, you know, if you can put $20-$30 aside every week, and at end of the month buy you a couple cans of this or a couple buckets of that, a weed or what have you, you know, if you do that continuously at the end of 6 months or 12 months, you'll have a lot of food stored, and it won't necessarily interrupt too much with your budget. So we always encourage people to do what they can, but to do something. Don't look at it like it's too big a problem that you can't handle.
Well, are you better off to have food, for instance, that's freeze-dried? Are you better off to have these ready-made meals? Are you better off to have something that is simply canned and that they put these oxygen packets into it to absorb the oxygen? And of course, that way that no little critters can live in there because there's no oxygen for them to breathe.
Right.
What's the best way to do?
We use all of it. We suggest a variety, and for that reason, because if you just have wheat and salt and milk and honey, or that kind of the four, what they used to call the four basics years ago, you're going to be very hungry and very bored. So in our family units that we design, we put in both the air-dried foods, which are, you know, like instant mashed potatoes and things like that, you know, egg mix. We also put in the poly buckets of grain, beans, and seeds, because a poly bucket of wheat can net out about 45 pounds of wheat. It costs less than $20, and you can make almost 60 loaves of bread off that one bucket of wheat. You've got a lot of food for not much money, so we encourage people to have a variety of all of them. Now, the freeze-dried food, the manufacturer says it'll last at least 30 years. All of our other food will last 10, 20, 25 years real easy, so we know we have food that'll keep. And the MREs, which you saw being handed out through all the disasters throughout the world, Indonesia and Katrina and down in the Gulf Coast, those are the civilian version of the military meals ready to eat. And they're an awesome first-line emergency food. No cooking is required, no water is required. You literally can eat these by just using your fingers to tear open the pouch, the packet, get your crackers and get your beef stew or whatever out of them. And they're very nutritious and tasty. They use a lot of them over in Iraq for the troops out in the field. So we have quite a variety of foods that are available to us, and you can choose and pick. And a lot of people say, well, they've been going to the store, and they're buying some of the wet-packed foods and things like that, and that's great. That'll be the food you want to eat first, but you also want to have food that will store for many, many years.
Well, now, what about the dehydrated food? What's the difference between the freeze-dried and the dehydrated?
Well, dehydrated food is just like the food you, a lot of times you'd be eating at a restaurant, don't even know it. Like, for instance, you have mashed potatoes. A lot of times it's the potato granules, what we call them potato granules, but it's really instant mashed potatoes. You just add your water and butter and milk to it, and you have mashed potatoes. Freeze-drying, what they'll basically do there, it's a different process. Air-drying is where they would use low temperatures on like a conveyor belt, and they'll run the food down this, I call it like a tunnel oven, and they'll dry the foods gently, but also it will shrivel and shrink. Like, for instance, the peas look like a hard little green BB, and you do have to cook those in boiling water for, you know, 10, 15 minutes to rehydrate them, bring them back so you can eat them. Now, the freeze-dried peas, you do not have to do that. You literally can take them out of the can and eat them dry, or just put them in some hot water, wait 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and you've got a hot meal. Well, that's one of the advantages of the freeze-dried food. It's very, very convenient. For instance, like, say, the spaghetti with meat sauce. There again, you just add water, either hot or cold, depending on the situation. Wait 10 minutes till it rehydrates. You're ready to eat. No cooking is required. Of course, you got to remember, the more convenient the food is, normally the more expensive it is also. So there again, you can plan that in your budget. You want to have some convenient foods and some that take a little more to cook.
All right, fine. So everybody would get your suggestion to get something of everything there. And certainly remember that if they're talking, actually, if there was a bird flu epidemic, and I'm not suggesting there's going to be one, but if there were, you should be prepared to look after yourself for up to 6 months in your home without going out. Now, that's absurd. The average person wouldn't be prepared for that, and yet the question is, you know, if the push came to shove, what could people actually do?
Well, by stocking up and storing ahead, this is one of the best ways to do it. And if you have a little group or community or your little neighborhood, you can get together and do that and share skills and talents. It can be a lot easier for you. You also want to make sure you have water stored and have a water filter. It's going to be one of the most important things. We always mention food first because that seems to be one of people's favorite pastimes. But really, in reality, it's water. You need water. You can go longer without food than you can without water, so it's important to do that.
And what you're suggesting is probably people have stored water. In addition to that, they have some sort of a filter.
Yes, and then we have the big 55-gallon plastic drums you can store the water in. We also have smaller ones. We also like the 5-gallon poly buckets to store water in.
How long will the water stay in those 55-gallon buckets, 55-gallon barrels?
Well, we have one formula. It's an oxygen formula called Aerobic 07, which they say it will keep it up to 5 years. I've never been successful storing water over a year.
No, what happens to the water? Does it get a bad taste to it? Does it begin to grow bacteria or what?
Yeah,
I mean, usually you probably would put Clorox in when you're going to store it.
Well, it starts to grow. I did an experiment a number of years ago where I used Clorox, I used a hydrogen peroxide, and also used an oxygen formula. And within about a year, I had trouble with all of them. So, you know, if you really want to go with something that doesn't cost a lot of money, the chlorine bleach is very good. If we know it'll kill it, it's been used historically for years and years for that purpose in sanitizing. And if you don't like the chlorine smell or the taste, you can always dissipate that before you drink it also. So it's very easy to use. And what I suggest, checking your water supply at least once a year and to try it, but I would never drink it out of my stored water without first running it through a filter, no matter what I put in it.
All right, fine. And so you can get this 55-gallon. Now, let's imagine you've had water stored, and something's grown in it. You've dumped the water out. Can you put in more water and add chlorine to it, or how would you clean out the barrels?
Yes. Well, what I've done in the past is I would empty that out, and then I would flush it with a very strong bleach solution. And I'd roll it around in there. I'd put maybe several gallons of water, and I'd dump in maybe a cup or two of bleach. And I'd seal it up, and I'd roll that around on the ground, and I'd let it sit a while. I'd roll it around for a couple of days to make sure, because the barrels got little crevices in them where they put the caps and lids on. I want to make sure I get all that. So I roll it around for a couple of days, then I dump it out and refill it. And then you have pretty good luck with it then.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to talk to Richard, he's going to be with us until the half hour, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. These are things that people in the civilized society don't ordinarily think about. But we are living in a less and less civilized society. And I've been watching things for about 43 years now, and looking at the scriptures, looking at what's happening in the world, reading what people are saying in Asia, which you're not reading in your newspaper, what they're saying in India, what they're saying in Europe, makes me think that we're on the verge of some very big things. And I'm talking maybe 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years. And I'm not a prophet. I never would anticipate being one, because if you're a prophet and you make the wrong prophecy, well, you know what happens to those prophets. But I think it is prudent for people to prepare, and this is why we have Richard on here, and of course let you know how to get hold of him. Again, your telephone number?
Well, I'm at 1-800-321-2900. That's 1-800-321-2900.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here with Richard, and give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question. All right. Well, I guess it's Richard Mankemeyer, and we're talking about general preparedness. Is there? Do you feel that there is an increase in concern out there, more so than you've seen on the average through the years you've been doing what you're doing?
Right now, we've seen just a slight increase in interest since the hurricanes in the United States. It's interesting. There'll be major disasters throughout the rest of the planet, and most people in this country don't pay much attention, although they will donate and help, which is, you know, America's one of the generous nations in the world. But we always encourage people to watch what's going on and to do what you can to prepare yourself and be ready to shelter, as we call it, in place. That means wherever you are, your home, be able to handle that. We always suggest you have at least a 72-hour kit with you at all times. That was something that would supply you with food and water and all the basics that you need for a minimum of 3 days. In case you were stuck at work, maybe you had to walk home or something like that. And we always suggest, too, that you have medical supplies. If you're dependent on any particular prescriptions, you may want to contact your doctor to see if you can get a prescription ahead, maybe a month ahead or so, if you're dependent on anything like that. It's always good to have at least a first aid kit and take some, maybe a CPR class to learn how to handle emergency situations that you may be involved with in your own family or neighborhood. So there's a lot of things we can do to prepare. And many of them don't cost a lot of money. So some of them are free.
In fact, I think it's an awfully good idea to have a good supply of vitamins on hand, and multivitamins, specifically vitamin C and vitamin D, and zinc and selenium and garlic and oil of oregano. These are certainly natural antibiotics. And, of course, you can get antibiotics on hand to get them from your doctor. Why, it's a good idea to have these things available. Remember, if there were some sort of a catastrophe, you're not going to be able to go down to the store and get much of anything. The people in New Orleans who were able to stay in their homes were those who were prepared. And even without electricity, many of them actually had generators. They were able to keep their refrigerators going. They were able to keep food there. They had enough food on hand. They were able to stay in their homes. The people who left their homes, many of them were looted. Because, of course, the police and the National Guard and the Army didn't get there ready for quite some time. And so gangs of looters were coming in from adjacent communities to loot the community. And so many people that did leave their homes, and they left their homes unguarded. And the people would come around, knock on the door. Nobody came. Why? They'd go inside. If somebody came, they'd ask directions. And it's unfortunate, but there really is an awful lot of evil in the hearts of people. The people who were prepared could stay at home and guard their homes. And the people who were not prepared, well, you know what happened to so many of them. So anyway, certainly our guest is Richard, and Richard has been at this game for a long period of time. Now, as far as these shelters, how big are these shelters that you actually build those yourself?
Yes, or we do.
Get those built for you?
We manufacture them here. Our underground shelter is 8 foot in diameter by 27 feet long. It reminds one of a mini submarine. We reinforce these both inside and out, and we make them to look something like the inside of a motorhome. We have a complete shower, bathroom, toilet area. We have a double stainless steel sink in the kitchen, food preparation area, lots of storage. We have beautiful sleeping areas, both on the lower deck, we call it, and then in the bunks up above. And they're actually really made for long-term survival. And they're set up so we have natural airflow. We have air filters. We can design them almost to anything somebody wants. And I encourage people to go to our website. Our website has a wealth of information on it. That's survivalcenter.com. Sign up for our free news alert. We send out alerts on all the neat things that we can talk
about. Hold
that
thought right there, Richard, for just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Richard Mankemeyer, and he basically was telling us about what they have in the way of these shelters, and basically they're 8 feet long. 8 feet high and about 27 feet long, and there's some people who actually are very, very concerned about the danger of a nuclear attack. And I will tell you that they have these centers, secure centers for the elite in this country. They have them on the West Coast. They have them on the East Coast. They're preparing for the elite to survive. If there is a nuclear attack, the rest of us, well, we're going to have to fend for ourselves because of this philosophy of mutual assured destruction. Well, what it really isn't mutual assured destruction. In other words, we kill you, you kill us. It's assured destruction for the American people because they've discouraged any effort on the part of the average citizen to be prepared. And only very recently have they even suggested that people begin laying in supplies. To the credit here in California, our governor and his wife have been stressing that. But certainly the idea of a nuclear war. Well, a nuclear war is survivable, but not if you don't make some preparation. So everybody can't have a shelter, but you need to begin thinking about the things you would need and just hope and pray it never occurs. But there are an awful lot of rumblings over in the Middle East at the present time, suggesting there is going to be some sort of an attack on Iran and some sort of an attack on Syria. Let's wait and watch and see and hope that I'm wrong. Well, Richard, you were simply going ahead and talking a little bit about the preparation.
Okay, well, we've talked a little bit about our underground shelters. We also have a nice above-ground shelter. It seats six people. It can be anchored in your backyard. We camouflage it with a little garden shed and properly anchored into the ground. It will withstand winds up to 200 miles an hour. And then for those people who maybe don't want to go outside, they want to stay inside their home, we can shelter them because we saw how the tornadoes and stuff will destroy a building in no time flat. And the people who really walked out of those structures after it was over with is the people who had actually built little shelters within their home. So most anything is survivable, and that's what we try to do here at the Survival Center, is to provide many options for you to be able to choose from, depending on what your economic situation is and your motivation. We can help you to prepare for most any emergency that may come your way. And one of the ways nature protects her critters is to get them underground or in the shelter, as we know from watching nature.
What's your web page again, so people would be able to know how to get in touch with you?
Please check out our website at survivalcenter.com. You can call us toll-free at 1-800-321-2900, and our website is expanding and growing. You mentioned earlier about some of the natural remedies. We have added a whole section to our website on our medical page. We have a lot of herbs that are wildcrafted here in the Northwest. They're making some excellent tinctures and stuff that are helping the people here, and we want to let the other people know about it. Our super tonic is awesome. It's kept our family up and running all winter so far, and we're looking forward to the rest of the winter. So there's a lot of things people can do if you're not able to get to the pharmacy that you need to have stocked at home that you can use in the event of emergency. And that's what we're really saying here. We're building the case for people to be prepared and to be prepared to shelter, to stay in place wherever you are in the event that we would have to either be quarantined or we might want to quarantine ourselves for a while.
And, of course, there are lots of things that you can take to ward off even viral diseases. And one of the things that a lot of people take when they're going to fly is airborne. An awful lot of people will pick up something when they get onto a plane. And I know I've certainly noticed, so if I take the airborne, it's got echinacea and it's got vitamin C, and I've got half a dozen other things. But these are just standard herbal things, natural things, and yet they really do cut down the incidence of viral disease. And you're going to have to really start thinking about looking after yourself. And you've probably even got some better suggestions, don't you, Richard?
Oh, I have so many suggestions. We could go on for hours. But I highly suggest you go to our website, survivalcenter.com, sign up for our free news alert. And then it's password protected. Once you put in your password, then you can go to the archives, and there's some awesome archives in there. We did a little thing here just last week. The headline on it was the fact that there was a blizzard up in North Dakota, and they had a major emergency. It was like they had 90-mile-an-hour winds, and they had 44 inches of snow, and they went on to tell about how they handled that up there. The headline was Blizzards with Thunder and Lightning. And so you can see there are parts of this country that know how to handle natural disasters. And then up in the Dakotas, you know, they have this all the time. They get these blizzards, and they just expect them, so they're prepared.
Well, of course, they got to be prepared to stay indoors for 3, 4, 5 days a week or more.
Well, they do. And so, you know, it's interesting. Go to our news alert, sign up for it, and read the one of the archives called Blizzard, Thunder, and Lightning. You'll get a big charge out of it. It's pretty cute.
All right, fine. Well, let's get at your telephone number just one more time and your webpage just one more time before we let you go.
All right. We're at toll-free 1-800-321-2900. That's the Survival Center in McKenna, Washington. Our website is survivalcenter.com. www.radiotivity.com.
Okay, God bless, and thanks very much, and have a wonderful Christmas, and we'll be talking to you next year.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Richard Mantkemeyer from the Survival Center. He's been around for, well, been around for a good long while. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're going to have a half hour of open lines. So if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And of course, we'd love to hear from you because we have nothing specifically prepared. Other than I thought maybe we would talk about the president's speech a couple of nights ago, where he addressed the nation, and he really basically said this: we have two choices in Iraq. It's victory or defeat. And if we stay on, why, we can have victory. If we pull out, we'll have defeat. And now, on the other hand, Congressman Murtha, and of course the president's speech was really aimed at countering Congressman Murtha's speech on the 17th of November. Congressman John Murtha had said, look, we've already won the war. I mean, we've got rid of Saddam Hussein. We've got rid of all of Saddam Hussein's associates, or they're either dead or in prison. So why don't we just pull out, turn the country over to the Iraqis as soon as practicable, and he specified as soon as practicable, as soon as different areas are ready to take over local control, and then we'll actually get all of our troops out of Iraq. We'll keep them somewhere not too far away so that in case there is a real emergency, we can send in a unit of Marines to help out the local law enforcement to maintain local law and order until such time as the Iraqis are able to do it on their own. But right now, as long as there is the presence of occupation troops there, and we are looked upon as the occupiers. And you know, how would the American people feel if there were a foreign country, a foreign troops in our land that were, of course, engaged in, you know, certainly arresting people and taking on police activities and controlling our politicians and directing the course of what's going on? Wouldn't we object to that? Certainly that's what happened in the Philippines when we went in and liberated them from the Spanish control, from the Spanish monarchy, back in 1898 was the Spanish-American War. But of course the war didn't stop once the Spanish had surrendered. The Filipinos didn't want us there, and we killed between 200,000 and 1 million Filipinos in the process of liberating them. Now, we didn't lose that many troops of our own. We only lost about 5,000 troops. But there were between 200,000 and 1 million Filipinos who died because we were occupying their country. And that's really what's going on in Iraq today. Certainly, there's a foreign terrorist there, but an awful lot of the people are Iraqis who look upon the United States as occupiers. And Congressman Murtha says, let's get out. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and first we're going to have open lines as next 25 or 30 minutes until we get to our next program. But right now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have something you'd like to bring up or you'd like to comment on what I was saying, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I was simply pointing out that the president, within 3 or 4 weeks after the attack on Iraq, landed his fighter plane. Well, he really didn't land the plane, but that was the perception they were trying to give you. Landed this plane. He was in a plane that landed on the deck of a carrier. Of course, he was wearing flight gear, and everybody said how he had landed the plane, but you don't land a plane, you know, unless you're a Navy pilot. You're specifically trained to land on a carrier. It was a great public relations situation, but the president did announce that we had won the war in Iraq. And then, of course, what happened was immediately Paul Bremer was sent over there to destabilize the country. How did we destabilize Iraq? Because, after all, they had an intact army, they had an intact police force, they had an intact social structure, and we went in there and we dissolved the army, and we dissolved the police force, and we dissolved the civil service, and we created intentionally chaos, because that was the only way we could justify staying there and then starting this long, drawn-out war. Now, the president says that we're winning the war, it's only a matter of time, before we can declare victory and come home. And I would like to suggest that that is not the plan. How do we know what the plan is? Well, you listen and see what these people were saying immediately after the 911 attack. And if you get my little pamphlets, they're entitled Foreknowledge 911 Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. And we actually have all of the statements that were made at that time by the various people who were involved. And it's really fascinating to go back and read what was said at that time. And certainly when Donald Rumsfeld was asked how long the war was going to last, he said, well, it's going to last a long time. It's sort of like the Cold War that lasted 50 years. That's what Donald Rumsfeld said when he was asked what was going to happen. And then the president gave a wonderful speech talking about how, you know, we'll ask you for your patience because this is going to be a long, we'll ask you for your courage because it's going to be difficult. And then he went on to say that this was going to go on for a very long time. And then they interviewed the prime minister of France at that time. And he said, this war is going to go on forever. And I think that that is exactly what is intended. We are going to have perpetual war for perpetual peace, but we can't tell the American people that because, of course, they would object to this idea. And our goal is not simply to get rid of the wicked Saddam Hussein. Our goal is to change the entire world. That's what it's really all about, to replace every ruler in the world with somebody that, you know, will be go along with our plan for the New World Order and the New World Religion. If you look at the Middle East today, why what has happened is we've given tremendous impetus to the radical Islamic movement. If a fair election were held in Egypt today, the radical Islamic people would take over the country. That the same thing would happen in Pakistan, the same thing has already happened in Turkey, where they've had democratic elections, and the majority of their parliament or Congress or whatever they call it in Turkey are now radical Islamists who are dedicated to the same goal as Osama bin Laden. This never had happened before, and it was only because of our involvement in the Middle East and our attack on the Holy Land, you know, and the Muslims look upon their land, this is their land, it's Holy Land. And, of course, this whole thing was provoked by the fact that we occupied Saudi Arabia for a long period of time, and I think we still have an airport there, a fighter base. I wouldn't swear to that one way or the other, but it was this whole idea that we were occupying Saudi Arabia, where their holy places are, Mecca and Medina, that has caused tremendous growth of this whole radical Islamic movement. There were really very, very few people involved with the radical Islamic movement, you know, in the Near East and Middle East and North Africa, until just a very, very few years ago. And then, of course, our crusade against the countries over there, and they look upon it as a crusade, a return of the Crusaders, has done everything, we've done everything we could to antagonize the Muslims. Why in the world do you think that we publicized the pictures of the torture at Abu Ghraib prison? I mean, the humiliation of those people. Why would you put those pictures out publicly and admit that it happened, and then punish a couple of you know, low people? Actually, of course, if you listen to what the people who were tried and convicted and went to prison said, they said we were actually carrying out the instructions that were given to us by the people who were there in the CIA. But who from the CIA has been punished? And the answer is absolutely no one. And then, of course, we allowed people to take pictures of the humiliated and degraded Islamic prisoners wearing orange jumpsuits at Guantanamo with earmuffs on so they couldn't hear anything, and eye shields blindfolded so they couldn't see anything, in chains, kneeling on the ground. Why would you put out pictures like that unless you were trying to inflame the Islamic world? And then the charges that guards at Guantanamo had desecrated the Quran. I mean, this is something that would obviously inflame the Muslims, and we, of course, circulated these stories as well. Everything we're doing is aimed at increasing, you know, the anger towards America and recruiting people for this radical Islamic movement. Egypt today if there were free elections held, would go along with radical Islam. Algeria, which of course had been involved in a long and bitter war, and I think there were almost 1 million people killed there, fighting this radical form of Islam, and the government took control, and the government was popular, the people did not want the radical form of Islam, but now it's in gaining popularity there. And certainly, if free and open elections were held in Pakistan, why, certainly, the radical form of Islam would take over there. If elections and free and open elections were held in Saudi Arabia, the radical Islamists would take over there. The Shia Muslims are the majority there. They're second-class citizens. And, of course, remember, it was out of Saudi Arabia that Osama bin Laden came. Well, if you're in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And it is my contention, listening to what the leaders of this country said immediately after 9/11, that this war is not going to end, in a year or 2 years or 5 years, if we allow them to continue, because their goal has nothing to do with America. Their goal and their loyalty is to this idea of a coming world government and a new world religion. And when you hear the president talking about how we're going to bring democracy to the Middle East, you really need to go back and you need to read a book written by Manly P. Hall, who was a Satanist. The book is called The Secret Destiny of America. It was written back in the 1930s or 1940s, but it was written many, many years ago. And there Manly P. Hall talks about how it has always been the goal of the ancient mystery religions to bring about world democracy. The program has been going on for 3,000 years. Now, why would the United States want to bring democracy to the world when we aren't a democracy? We're a republic. And if you read what Plato had written, in his Republic, and you'll find this quotation in John Bartlett's familiar quotations, he says, democracy always deteriorates into despotism. Democracy always deteriorates into despotism. You read the writings of the founding fathers of America. The last thing they wanted here in the United States was democracy. So why is it that we seem to be so intent upon bringing democracy to the rest of the world? Are we carrying out this program that was laid out many years ago by the ancient mystery religions? And it is my contention that that is exactly what's going on today. And so you have to understand that we are not really trying to bring peace to Iraq. If we were trying to bring peace to Iraq, the first thing we'd do is go after the source of funding for the Islamic terrorists. Who is actually funding the insurgents? Well, one of the sources of funding is coming from the Palestine Liberation Organization. And they have a fund, and they pay the families of the insurgents who blow themselves up killing Americans. But who is funding the Palestine Liberation Organization and administration? Why, you are, ladies and gentlemen. Your tax money is going to fund the PLO and the Palestine Liberation Authority. And then, of course, part of the money is coming from Saudi Arabia, and of course, your money, we're even giving money to Saudi Arabia by the Middle East Development Administration, $110 million, and part of that will go to Saudi Arabia. And the Saudis are the major source of funding for the Iraqi insurgents. Now, why don't we cut off those funds? And they will always give you all sorts of absurd excuses. But, of course, we never get around to it. Well, the Saudis are really going to start doing something one of these days. Oh, one of these days we're really going to take after these people who are funding the insurgents. But we never get around to it. And if you go up on the Internet and Google in terrorist camps in Pakistan, you'll find article after article after article how those terrorist camps are still operating in Pakistan today. But who's funding Pakistan? Why, we're funneling billions of dollars into Pakistan today so that Musharraf, the dictator there, can maintain control over the army and over the population. Why would we do something that absurd? Why would we be funding him? He said, oh, I can't shut down the terrorists. If I did, I'd get a lot of unrest here in the country. Ladies and gentlemen, the ISI, the Pakistani intelligence, has always been controlled by people who are supporting al-Qaeda, as is the Pakistan military, and we are funding them today. So until you begin to understand, it's just like it was in Vietnam, in Vietnam. The North Vietnamese, just a little tiny country the size of the state of Mississippi, and America, the mightiest country in the world, could rotate millions of people in and out of Saigon, and we could never win the war. And do you know why we didn't win the war? Because we never tried to win the war. I mean, where do you think that North Vietnam got there? Got their sophisticated MiG airplanes. Do you think that they made those in the little thatched huts there? Where did they get the sophisticated anti-aircraft guns and the radar that they used to shoot down American planes? Why, it came from Russia. And where did Russia get the technology and the money to build them? They got it from the United States. It was during the Vietnam War era that we built the largest truck plant in the world. The Kama River plant. I've forgotten how many acres it was, but it was the largest truck and manufacturing institution in the entire world. We built that, and we financed it for the Russians so they would have trucks that they could send to North Vietnam to carry the supplies down the Ho Chi Minh Trail to kill American boys. And the same thing happened at Gorky, which is, of course, where they manufactured the Ford trucks that were sent to North Vietnam to go down the Ho Chi Minh Trail to kill our boys. We funded the Russians. The Russians funded the North Vietnamese. And now, 40 years later, why we're funding the PLO? The PLO is funding the insurgents. We're funding the Saudis. The Saudis are funding the insurgents. We're funding the Pakistanis. The Pakistanis are funding the insurgents. And the war will go on and on and on. We're told we have two choices, victory or defeat. Persistence, in Iraq, or pulling out and doing the dishonorable thing. And if we were to pull out, no one would ever trust our word again. Well, ladies and gentlemen, people don't trust our word anyway. I mean, we have said that we would never torture anybody, and furthermore, we're going to stop torturing them, and we're going to change our policies. Now, you can't have it both ways. But they've been lying. And they've been lying to the American people, and they actually have been involved in torture. They've been kidnapping people there's one fellow was kidnapped in Macedonia, another fellow was kidnapped off the streets of Rome, I think it was. Anyway, he was in Italy, and he was kidnapped there. And they're taking to other countries where they're torturing them. And where is the outcry from the Christians in this country? How do you justify torture? Oh, we've got to torture them. That's how we're going to protect the American people. Ladies and gentlemen, when you lose your moral foundation, you are no longer entitled to be free. And do you really think that God is going to bless a country that kidnaps peoples and tortures them, and sometimes they even get the wrong individual? In fact, last weekend, Sunday on 60 Minutes, they interviewed a fellow from Germany who they tortured for 5 or 6 months, and then they found out, oh shucks, we got the wrong guy. Well, we're going to turn him loose. And they took him to Macedonia, and they let him out on a road with nobody around. And, of course, no money, no nothing. I mean, here is a man let off in a strange country. But there's Macedonia, Croatia. They just left him off there, and they said, just don't look back. Just go ahead. And, he thought they were going to kill him. Fortunately, they didn't. Maybe they're sorry that they didn't, because after all, he's an embarrassment. Why, do you realize that this ungrateful individual is going to sue Donald Rumsfeld in international courts? How do you think this looks to the rest of the world? What happened to the morality of America? At one time, America was the city on the hill. It was the ideal of people throughout the world. It was a Christian country, and everybody in the world knew America was a Christian country. But you have to understand that there have been powerful forces at work here in the United States undermining the very Christian foundations of this country. There really are evil forces at work. They permeate every level of our society. They are working within our universities, within our entertainment industry, within our foundations, within our government, within our military, within our intelligence agencies, and many of these are evil people. Now, some people are just doing their jobs. After all, they have to make a living, and if they speak out, they're going to lose their job, they're going to lose their pension, they're going to lose their health insurance, they've got children in college, and so they go along with the system, the corruption, but it eats away at their very soul. And somebody has to speak out and tell the American people what's happening and say, we've got to take America back. We've got to get back to the point where we are righteousness, where America stands for Christianity, for right and righteousness, not this idea that might makes right, but that righteousness makes right. and a Christian nation would never tolerate what's going on, and we would not be invading other countries trying to force our concepts of democracy on them. When the United States is not a democracy, the United States is a republic. It has always been a republic. The last thing that our founding fathers wanted was to have in this country a democracy, because they realized that, as certainly as Plato had said, democracy always passes into despotism. And you know, if you go back and you read the writings of some of the founding fathers of America, Plato lived in Athens, and this is what he wrote. Democracy, which is a charming form of government, full of variety and disorder, and dispensing a sort of equality to equals and unequals alike, we know her well. In what manner does tyranny arise? That it has a democratic origin is evident. And does not tyranny spring from democracy in the same manner as democracy from oligarchy? And democracy has its own good, of which the insatiable desire brings her to dissolution. The insatiable desire of this and the neglect of other things introduces the changes in democracy, which occasions the demand for tyranny. The excess of liberty, whether in states or individuals, seems only to pass into excess of slavery. And so tyranny naturally arises out of democracy, and the most aggravated form of tyranny and slavery out of the most extreme form of liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and if you're out there and you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and we have a little more time left in this hour, and we'd love to hear from you. If you go to the Encyclopedia Americana, you'll find this notation under the word democracy. Democracy is one of the most controversial concepts. Not only does it have powerful enemies, but even its friends are not always agreed about what they're defending. Beyond the common idea that democracy is the popular control of government, there's no universally accepted definition, and the concept is complicated by various secondary meanings common after the Industrial Revolution, such as social and economic democracy, and democracy as an ideology or as a total way of life. But let's go to what Charles Austin Beard wrote. Charles Austin Beard was the leading historian of America during the first half of the last century, and this is what he wrote. At no time, at no place, in solemn convention, assembled, as chooses agents, had the American people officially proclaimed that the United States to be a democracy. The Constitution did not contain the word, or any word, lending countenance to that, except possibly the mention of we, the people, in the preamble. When the Constitution was framed, no respectable person called himself or herself a Democrat. And ladies and gentlemen, this is what it's all about. How have they convinced us that we're a democracy? Very simply, they control the media, they control the entertainment, they control our educational system, they control the books, and of course, they've convinced us we're a democracy. But you can read the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and the Federalist Papers and the constitutions of any and all of our states, and you will never once see the word democracy used other than to decry it and say we do never want to have a democracy, because democracy always ends up with despotism. We want to have a republic. So why are we trying to institute a democracy in the Middle East? And why does the president say that we have to bring democracy to the rest of the world? Well, I'm sure he probably doesn't understand what history records, what Plato wrote, what Aristotle wrote, what all the great philosophers knew. And that is, democracy always ends up in tyranny. And unfortunately, we are engaged in a great war today to bring democracy to the rest of the world. And will come the end of all freedom, not only for the people in those countries, but I fear for the people here in this country, because there's going to be a backlash, and I fear for this country when I reflect that we may very well be very close to a nuclear war. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day. And then sometimes we do programs for other people as well, but we're trying to get people to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, educational, financial battlefield. And most people don't understand what energizes the people who would take the Christ out of Christmas. Understand why they will not allow the mention of intelligent design in schools. Oh, that would be a terrible thing. We can teach evolution, which of course is an anti-Christian or anti-God concept, but we can never mention intelligent design. Why the Masons on the United States Supreme Court, and there were Masons there in control between 1941 and 1971 in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. Why they wanted to take God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. Why? Because they worship a different God. And until you understand what happens when a Mason swears that oath, looking and seeking for the light, he is asking Lucifer to come into his very being. And unfortunately, most Masons have no idea what they're really involved in. They're good people, but they've been tragically misled. And because the Christian church has been afraid to speak out, and most ministers do not have the courage to take a stand, America will eventually be destroyed, unless, of course, we can educate enough people as to what's going on, and that's what I'm trying to do, and we hope that many of you out there will decide that you're going to help us, and you can help by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Learn more about our ministry. Find out about it. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, we'd love to have you on board with us. And then, of course, you can tell other people about our programs. You can go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs. You can record our programs. You can certainly lend those programs to other people. If you do get any of our 4 tape sets or videos that we have produced, you have our permission to copy them. Go to our website and certainly pull down my newsletters, and the May and June newsletters of this year. Go into the Occult Hierarchy, Part 1 and Part 2. If you'd like a free copy of one of those newsletters, we'd be glad to send you one. If you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, why don't you ask for the Occult Hierarchy Part 2? And it will take you into a world that most people don't even realize exists, but a world that is very real and is influencing both our domestic and foreign policy. We ask you to challenge us. If you want the documentation for anything we say, why we have that documentation, or can tell you where you can get it. Our number again, 1-800-544-8927. Let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Let me suggest the little pamphlets we have. One of them, of course, is entitled We Are a Republic, but three of them on the Occult Hierarchy, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. It's vitally important the American people understand what the nature of the battle is, and that the war in the Middle East is not going to end in a few months or a few years, unless, of course, the American people understand and are willing to take a stand for righteousness. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They have to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have us on the line, Pastor Joe Schimmel. And Joe has done the most amazing job of putting together a number of videos. And, of course, the ones we carry a number of videos he has, but certainly my favorite is They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version. Now, can you imagine sitting and watching a video for 10 hours? And yet I've had many of the people who've actually watched that call me and tell me they've watched it several times, because they've learned so much every time. And I know I've learned a great deal every time I watch these videos. Because, you see, music has such a tremendous impact on the hearts and the minds and the souls of the American people. And unfortunately, good music creates good people and wholesome culture, and bad music produces a bad society and a bad culture, and satanic music produces a satanic society and a satanic culture. And with that as a background, Pastor Joe Schimmel, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's great to be here, Dr. Stan. Thanks for having me.
Well, now, why don't you just start from the very beginning? Remember, a lot of these people have never heard you before. So I want you to tell how you got started in this whole thing, and speak slowly, because you have a tendency to speak very fast, and because I know you want to get so much in, but it's far better just to speak slowly and just go into the background of how you got started.
Okay, great. I assume even that 10 hours is probably about a 13, 14-hour deal if you slow me down.
All right.
But, I was probably one of the bigger skeptics in the world. I was very protective over the music I listened to, and it becomes an emotional subject. And that right there shows you some of the impact that music has on people. It becomes almost like an idol, or it does become an idol. And it certainly was in my life. I had a hard time believing in good or evil in a spiritual sense. And I basically, as a teenager, was an agnostic, bordering on atheist, but really I knew there was something out there, but I didn't know what. And I definitely rejected the Christian worldview. I thought it was mythological or what have you. And I began to explore the realm of the occult. In fact, I wasn't one of those, you know, New Age types in the beginning that said, hey, I want to get into occultic practices and open myself up to the spiritual world. I was pretty much a naturalist that believed there was something, and I began to get into books on the power of the subconscious mind and Psycho-Cybernetics by Joseph Murphy and Maxwell Maltz, a couple different guys that wrote books on the power of the subconscious. And as I got into these books, they talked about how you could program your subconscious mind by simply visualizing your success. And being a 17-year-old, you know, guitar player, I started visualizing my success on my guitar. And as a result of that, I was bombarded by all kinds of occult experiences that transcended in their content or their substance what was actually written in the books. They went way beyond the books. And I began to open myself up to a very, very spiritual world that was a very dark and evil world.
And, of course, I'm sure initially you had no idea what you tapped into, did you?
No, not a clue. I thought it was benign and natural. I began to realize it was supernatural as I began getting involved in automatic writing, and the spiritual world began to manifest in my life.
And I think it's so fascinating as you talk to Joe, and you begin to realize that he didn't even understand the words he was writing. He would simply begin writing, and he'd write some wonderful lyrics. But the trouble was, he didn't know what a lot of the words meant. But they made sense once he looked them up in the dictionary, and then he began to wonder, where did these words come from? Where did these ideas come from? We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor Joe Schimmel as he develops this idea that they sold their souls for rock and roll. Well, Joe, why don't you go ahead with the story?
Well, yeah, I was looking at my lyrics, and they began to, well, my lyrics and even the music I was writing, I began tuning my guitar differently, all at once, very strangely, playing a lot of very beguiling Eastern type melodies. And my friends would, you know, thought I was playing some kind of electric sitar, and my lyrics began to just flow in such a way which I didn't understand what was called automatic writing then, but were just concepts and lyrics would just kind of, you know, flow through me. And I would write lyrics like, you know, treacherous meadows touched by the devil, burdened with calamity and subdued by disease, or baby stroller in the creek, bad man hangs within the week. Very, you know, very evil, you know, satanic, glorifying lyrics. But many of them were quite deep on a philosophical level, and I was basically being initiated into the occult and the New Age worldview through occult phenomena that was taking place in my life. I was writing lyrics like, for instance, a song called Society, which basically proposed a very, you know, Gnostic worldview, and Gnosticism was the main threat to the early church in the second century, and is basically pagans interfacing with Christianity and the scripture, and basically using it in verse hermeneutic, whereby God becomes the devil and the devil becomes book God. And in my lyrics, I was basically writing in that song, one song called Society, about a character named Tiki Tom that came to me one day on a Saturday. Tiki Tom, the Indian boy, I began to write about him, and how Tiki Tom was stabbed in his stay afloat in society's leaky boat, and how, you know, then it went on, cumbersome timber town, live and done, winter's wound, do you know the skies will weep tonight? And I had to look at these lyrics, and all of a sudden, you know, Tiki Tom's in this boat, which is a metaphor for society, stabbing to keep it afloat, which is obviously going to have the opposite effect. And then you have this cumbersome timber town, live and done, winter's wound, do you know the skies will weep tonight? There's going to be a storm coming, a winter storm, and it's going to make his plight even worse. So it made this really, you know, a painful situation, and then it asked the question, is all worth life on earth to be a fly, a flower, a president without power, a bum in the park, a priest in the dark, a scalp without hair, a town with no fear? And then the answer came, not to turn to the Lord Jesus Christ for redemption, but to turn inward and into these six senses and these occult senses. It said color and sound are all around. Our greatest senses remain to be found.
Now, when did you begin to realize that you were actually channeling these words from a demonic spirit?
Well, at first I look at the nature of my lyrics, and a lot of them were very, you know, very overtly satanic. And we're talking about 1979, 1980. So I figured, hey, my subconscious must be tapping into what's going to be really popular in the 80s because this stuff's flowing through me. And I tried to justify it that way. I didn't realize I was in touch with demonic forces. But as my experiences began to increase and began to become more and more demonic, to where I began to get communication from, you know, disembodied spirits. Not
hold that thought right there. We'll be
sure.
Back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I guess this evening is Pastor Joe Schimmel, and he's been telling about his experience as a young man, beginning, of course, to play the guitar, beginning to get the wonderful melodies, the strange melodies. It didn't know where they were coming from, and then he's writing these lyrics, and these lyrics, lots of the very, very complex and very, very deep and sinister meaning, with a lot of words he didn't even understand. He had to look them up in the dictionary to find out what they were, but when he looked them up, why, everything made sense. But where did it come from? It didn't come from his own mind. He didn't know the meaning of the words, and so he begins gradually to get the idea that maybe this is being channeled to him. Is that right, Joe?
Well, yeah, a lot of my lyrics were basically glorifying Satan, and I thought, well, my subconscious is tapping in again to what's going to be popular and so forth. In fact, one of my earliest songs is called My Family and My Soul, and it started out by saying I couldn't be freed, for the devil was grasping my soul, and I was falling forever deeper into the hole, and I could hear my mother screaming and my sister screaming and my father dying and my brother crying. And
well, that's a little scary. I mean, that's pretty bizarre.
Well, yeah, and then I said, at first I was troubled with the devil for the reason, then the choice had dawned, it would be my soul or that of my family's to be treasoned. I could not win to be a devil or a demon, and the song goes on to where I basically greet my family to say goodbye, and so I won, or maybe so, and so I left with my soul. I didn't only sell my soul, I sold my family's soul for rock and roll, and then I began to rock and roll, and that's where my guitar solo was. And I thought, wow, man, this is amazing. I don't even believe in the devil, but all these lyrics are just flowing out of me and so forth. And then as my experiences began to get more and more morbid, and I began to get communicated on a couple different occasions by an audible voice, I began to realize, you know what? This is not a subconscious, impersonal power. I'm in touch with spiritual entities. I even wrote a song about that, talking voices in my head. Are they good or are they bad? They shake my bed to comfort me, but I see it uncomfortably. That high-pitched humming will never go. It only seems to want to grow. I had no idea, Dr. Stan, that that humming experience, I'd go through a state of paralysis where I'd hear this loud humming sound, almost like the emergency broadcast sound, and that was kind of a staple to my experiences during that time. I had no idea. I ended up realizing, you know what, I need to test this thing. I didn't know the Bible said test the spirits to see whether or not they're from God. But I knew just logically, if this is evil and Satan exists, certainly God exists. There's a and in the midst of one of my experiences, a paralysis experience with the humming, I cried out to God and with tears, you know, I couldn't even move. I was in paralysis, but in my heart, and that was enough. Right as soon as I cried out to him, my experience stopped. A little bit later, it happened again. I did the same thing. I cried out to him, but more directly on the Lord Jesus Christ. It stopped again. At that point, I made an active choice to, this is real. And I opened up the pages of Scripture, a book that I thought was a book of fairy tales. Of course, I hadn't studied it like most people who, put down the Bible. And then all of a sudden, the very war I was in, the very spiritual battle I was in, was all written about in the Scripture, that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and the rulers of the darkness of the world and spiritual wickedness in high places. I turned to the Lord Jesus Christ, and lo and behold, as I began looking at all the bands I was into, I began to find that so many of the top leading rock stars that are worshipped back then, prior to then, and even now, had very similar experiences, had been communicated to with spirits. Even the humming experience, the most popular song of all time, Stairway to Heaven, rock song, says, and it's all about its glorification of Satan in that song, and it says, if your head is humming, it won't go, in case you don't know. The piper is calling you to join him. And the piper in that song is a representative of the deceiver. And I began to see with Jimi Hendrix, a state of paralysis with the strange sound going through him, and many other famous people who had basically the piper called to service. And I ended up turning my life totally over to Jesus Christ. And I felt like I had almost like a road to Damascus type experience, like Paul, the very thing Paul was building, was tearing down Christianity. And then God called him to build it up. I was tearing down Christianity with my lyrics and so forth. And thank God he caught me before I, did too much harm, or before I ended up one of those dead rock and rollers down the road. And it was, there's literally been thousands if you look at clubs and everything else. So I just give glory to God. And by the way, thank God, Dr. Stan, my family, come from a family of seven, three sisters, my brother, Mom, all turn to the Lord Jesus Christ, and have, they're all very active in the fellowship that I pastor right now. Now we're talking, 25 years later, 42 right now. I still feel young, but man, that makes me sound pretty old. But it's heartbreaking because millions and millions of people are being held bound by satanic music that's basically dictating the culture in which they live their lives.
And I think this is what people really must understand. There really is a spiritual battle that's going on. And one of the places you can see it so clearly is in modern music. And so many of the people here, frankly, will acknowledge that they are into Satanism. If they don't, you can tell it through the context of their songs, and they will be singing to Mr. Crowley. Now, to the average individual, the name Mr. Crowley doesn't mean much, but certainly in your films you have pictures of Aleister Crowley on the cover of one of the Beatles' most famous albums, and certainly some of the other albums, and you have pictures of certainly Ozzy Osbourne and Marilyn Manson singing about Mr. Crowley. Why don't you explain to our listeners who Mr. Crowley is and why it's so important that the Beatles were disciples of Aleister Crowley? That certainly the was it the people in the Led Zeppelin were Crowleyites as well?
Yeah, it's amazing because of all the men who have influenced the world, especially the modern world, I personally believe that Aleister Crowley, if he's not the top, he's top one or two, especially what's going on socially in the world. Aleister Crowley was the most highly regarded Satanist of his time, and he's still the most influential Satanist of modern history. And what's amazing about Crowley is his whole desire was to influence the world and bring in what he called it, New World Order, called the New Eon, the Age of Satan. And he signed his name, the Beast, 666, and so forth. And he said he was from Great Britain, but he said his desire was to go after the United States of America. And particularly, he said he was going after the youth, not only in America, but also in Great Britain, because he said he felt that the youth would be the most easily influenced. So basically, he engineered a lot of what happened in the hippie movement in the 1960s. His satanic philosophy was based on the maxim, do what thou wilt, shall be the whole of the law. And it's interesting because that philosophy became do your own thing in the 1960s, and his pushing of Eastern mysticism, drugs, and illicit drugs and mind-altering drugs and so forth, different types of not only mysticism and philosophy, do what thou wilt, but a host of sexual perversions and so forth. All of these things became very popular among the youth culture in the 1960s. But what's incredible, we're not just saying, hey, look, this is what Crowley said, and this is what happened. What's amazing, in the 1960s, he was basically the unsung hero of the 1960s. He was the patron saint, still is to this day, of rock and roll, and we see his influence throughout the music of the 60s all the way until right now. In fact, one of the amazing things is if you look at the top people academically that pushed, free drugs and free sex and the gay liberation movement in the 1960s, we're talking about people that were into Aleister Crowley and trying to further his agenda. In fact, Timothy Leary, in a PBS interview that we show on the all of the tapes that we offer, 3, 4, and 10-hour version, Timothy Leary, who was the Harvard drug professor that was defrocked, and then basically, the song Come Together by the Beatles was written about him, and he worked with the Beatles, and he called them the four evangelists. Timothy Leary, we have him there saying on PBS that he is basically completing the mission of Aleister Crowley. Now, you look at the top guy for the gay liberation movement, Harry Hay. Harry Hay was the organ player for one of Crowley's OTO lodges in Los Angeles, and he was the founder of the gay liberation movement, and he's called the oldest hippie in the 1960s. Well, what's such an old guy doing hanging out with the hippies? Well, that was Crowley's deal. We have to go after the youth. Playboy Magazine, editor, Robert Anton Wilson, throughout some of the hippie movement, he is also influenced radically by Aleister Crowley. He said he practices a lot of his magic and read all of his books and so forth. So we can go on and on, not just through music, but just in what's transformed culture. Think of Alfred Kinsey, just a huge movie just came out, glorifying him and so forth. Well, we have a picture of Alfred Kinsey, the professor that wrote, sexual male and also female, and so influenced the school system, so influenced our laws and lessened and loosened the sexual laws that have made it a revolving door for pedophiles and so forth, and also influenced the pornographic industry. We have a picture of Kinsey with the Satanist, Kenneth Anger, at Aleister Crowley's former, his former abbey in Sicily. He was actually kicked out of Sicily because of the atrocious acts that were happening there. We have Kenneth Anger, co-founder of Satan, Kinsey, together taking a staged picture underneath a portrait of Aleister Crowley. And Kenneth Anger, who was, got close to Kinsey at that time, had said that Kinsey had a 24/7, basically a 24/7 relationship with Aleister Crowley, or I should say infatuation, and he was funded by the Rockefeller Institute during the time. And it's just tragic. Now, we've gotten off the subject of music a little bit, but I think it's important that people realize this is far-reaching. This is a satanic agenda that is destroying the family. Aleister Crowley said that the family is public enemy number one.
And, Chris, wasn't Aleister Crowley part of British intelligence for a time?
Well, yeah, he was part of British intelligence. He was also not part of British intelligence, but he was also a high-ranking Mason, 33rd degree Mason, but he also got called up to even a higher grade.
And he actually tells that in his biography, that he had been a 33rd degree Mason, for 12 years before he was invited to go to the upper levels, far beyond the 33rd degree, which most Masons don't even know exist. That is the amazing thing about this. And the average Mason is a good man. He really doesn't understand what he's into. But Aleister Crowley did, because he was in the upper echelons, those that direct the course of human events. Well, certainly, let's get back, of course, to the influence of music, because many of the people who are involved in music really know the source of their power and their strength and their popularity, don't they?
Yeah, that's for sure. By the sound of your music, I'm not sure much how much time I have this second, so should I reserve it for when we come back? Or?
All right, we'll reserve it for when you get back. Our guest this evening is Pastor Joe Simmel, and he has done a magnificent job of putting together a number of videos, and we carry several that he's done, including one on Harry Potter. And amazingly, Harry Potter, this series on witchcraft, which has brought so many of our children into the witchcraft and acceptance of witchcraft, has been recommended as good reading by many of our Christian ministries that just don't understand what's going on. But we'll be back in just a moment with Pastor Joe Schimmel. Well, Joe, why don't you go ahead and pick up with the rest of the story there?
Well, yeah, how Crowley relates to music is quite interesting, because if you look at the top rock bands of the 60s, not just maybe the top academics that influenced so much of the youth, you can look at The Doors, which was the biggest American rock band of the 1960s, and Jim Morrison was all about revolution, and he said it. He said, you know, chaos and so forth. And Jim Morrison had admitted making a pact with Satan. He said in his Wilderness biographical sketches that he met the spirit of music on a Venice canal. He identifies that spirit as Satan in his own writings, and says that he was given several songs at that point. But it's interesting, you look at one of his albums, 13, which we show the picture, you have him and the rest of the members of The Doors hovering around a bust, actually, of Aleister Crowley. Now, we also show in our video, and this is our video, is a bunch of clips of different rock bands and so forth and interviews, just evidence that is incontrovertible. We've had lawyers tell us if you presented this in a court of law, you'd win hands down. We show so much evidence that this is going on. And it's interesting because we even show, you know, where Ray Manzarek talks about, you know, he's a shaman and so forth. Or you know, Ray Manzarek was his keyboard player, and Ray Manzarek actually said that his fingers would get taken over, you know, when they'd be playing, and that Jim Morrison would get taken over. We show Jim Morrison get taken over where different voices are singing through him, even a woman-like voice, and very unnatural. But not only The Doors, but the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, the biggest probably rock bands of all time, certainly of the 60s, we should show where, you know, John Lennon had claimed that he had made not only a pact with the devil, but even his wife, Yoko Ono, before his death, went down to South America, signed a pact with a witch named Lena, and basically, you know, paid $60,000, they sacrificed an animal to Lucifer for her, John Lennon's career and hers and so forth. And John Lennon, front of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album, top left, one guy over, there he is, Aleister Crowley again. In fact, Lennon said before he died in an interview, and we document it, that the whole Beatle idea was to do what thou wilt, quoting, of course, Aleister Crowley. In fact, we show that Kenneth Anger, the co-founder of the Church of Satan, who's produced movies like Lucifer Rising and others, promoting Aleister Crowley, has actually worked with the Rolling Stones on their Satanic Majesty's Request, which came out with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album. And the song about Sgt. Pepper is about, you know, Sgt. Pepper taught the band to play. It was 20 years ago today, it says. Well, 20 years ago, almost to the day, in 1947, the album was released in 67, Aleister Crowley had died. That was the time where Timothy Leary says he feels that the baton was handed over to him. But it's interesting, they marked that year, and we show how those two albums go together, Satanic Majesties, along with the Sgt. Pepper's. And Sgt. Pepper's, Dr. Stan, Lonely Hearts Club Band album, has been heralded in the rock and roll world as the best concept album of all time. The ironic thing is, people don't have a clue what the concept was all about. The Rolling Stones, according to one of the men who lived with the Rolling Stones, wrote a book called Up and Down with the Rolling Stones for a year, he said that the Beatles and the Stones would talk long into the night about music and revolution and how they're going to change the world. Well, it's in that time that they put out this album in concert together under the inspiration as well of Kenneth Anger, the co-founder of Church of Satan. And what we find here is all these different things that Crowley wanted to implement through this movement of the 1960s, just a whole new age revolution of bringing the getting rid of the Christian age. In fact, Brian Jones, who started the Rolling Stones, said it's the end of the Christian age. He called it the age of Pisces, the fish, and the beginning of the age of Aquarius, and there's a youth movement afoot, and it gets youth.
Well, hold that thought for just a moment, Joe. We'll be right back here.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joe has been just talking about the influence on so many of the major bands here, the frankly satanic influence on them, and of course, certainly talked a little bit about this. Sgt. Pepper, was that the most famous of all the albums?
Well, it depends on which Beatle fan you talk to. A lot of them like Sgt. Pepper's because of concepts, and then, you know, some would like Revolver and so forth. But it's interesting, it was definitely one of the most famous of their albums, definitely the most famous concept album ever in history of any band. What's remarkable is, you know, John Lennon kind of tells you sometimes what he's up to, you know, and we show very clearly what, you know, what they were about. In fact, their press manager said, hey, the Beatles are completely Antichrist. He said, I mean, I'm Antichrist too, but they're so Antichrist they shock me. And, you know, sometimes people banter that quote around where John Lennon said, hey, we're more popular than Jesus now. And I've had people say, well, really, you know, he was just saying they're more popular. He wasn't saying anything anti-Christian. It was kind of a fact at the time because, you know, in the civilized world, I mean, most people were thinking about the Beatles at the time. But, and they think it was kind of some innocuous kind of statement. But if you look at the rest of the quote, he says, goes on to say, Christianity will vanish, it will shrink and die, and I will be proven right. In fact, he wrote a book, Dr. Stan, called A Spaniard in the Works, where it was basically a mockery of Jesus and the Trinity. He said, a Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. It was Father Sock and Mickey Most, which is blasphemous toward the Holy Spirit. And then he also had said, he characterized Jesus as a garlic-eating fascist, and then B-A-S-T-R-D. He says Jesus and calls him that. And to say that John Lennon was a man of peace, recently his ex-wife came out and acknowledged that, you know, even though he was singing songs about love and so forth, I mean, he totally had neglected, didn't even visit his own kid for an incredible amount of time. And the Beatles sang all about love, but then they broke up and hated each other bitterly for quite some time. And it's a false love, it's a false peace, and it carries right into the 70s with the biggest bands, like Led Zeppelin was the biggest band of the 70s, outsold the Rolling Stones 3-1 at that time. They took over where the Beatles had left off in 68. Led Zeppelin 1 replaced Abbey Road in the charts in 68, and they owned the decade of the 70s. And interestingly enough, you know, Jimmy Page opens up at a cult bookstore in England called, but he opens up an occult bookstore because he says he couldn't find a bookstore big enough to meet his occult needs. This is the leader of Led Zeppelin.
And was he the lead singer or was he the musician?
He's the guitar player, Jimmy Page. In fact, he even on stage for years, you know, he had often wore dragons and embroidered 666 on his pants, full on in the Crowley. In fact, it was called Equinox, was the name of that bookstore, and it was named after Crowley's periodical called Equinox of the Gods. And what's interesting, he's bought Loch Ness, Crowley's mansion overlooking Loch Ness, and boasted that that's where a church had been burned to the ground and so forth. And we show throughout Led Zeppelin's music from several different albums, Aleister Crowley's teachings being taught, even Led Zeppelin 3 on the vinyl on the album, the runoff matrix, it's inscribed, So Mote Be It on one side, which is to cast a spell. On the other side of the runoff matrix, it says, Do What Thou Wilt. Over and over again, I mean, there was one album called Presence, and it had this strange obelisk on the front, and everybody wondered, you know, what is that? And then on the inside of that album, it shows that obelisk on the golf course, it shows it with a teacher putting her hand in the school on the obelisk and one hand on a kid's head, like she's transmitting power. Well, that obelisk, if you look at Crowley's furnishings of the temple in his satanic books, he basically followed some of the instructions of Crowley's obelisk. And, I mean, a lot of people didn't have a clue. He was practicing Crowley's magic, receiving songs automatically. He would draw the shades in between concerts and put on Crowley's garb and paraphernalia and then open himself up to Satan and receive songs. Even in concert, Madison Square Garden, the most renowned concert footage for some time called Song Remains the Same. They, you know, photographed the concert. And it became basically the beginning of MTV. I mean, that's where MTV got a lot of its ideas of, hey, we need to put this stuff on video. And it was interesting because there we show Jimmy Page hitting his guitar with a violin bow. And I was way into Zeppelin. I didn't have a clue what he was doing, but that was my band. He hit the violin bow, and then he'd point with the violin bow as he crouched down to the four points of the compass going counterclockwise at each point.
Well, that's actually a satanic ritual, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. In fact, you can read about it in the Satanic Bible and also in Crowley's teachings. We show a picture of Crowley actually doing it with his cape on and so forth as he's invoking Satan.
And, of course, didn't they do the Stairway to Heaven?
Yeah, and we show on the 10-hour version like 25 words backwards straight as we play the song backwards, saying, here's to my sweet Satan. I want to live backwards like the Zep, whose power is Satan. He will give you 666.
And I think it's important that there really this reverse masking. No human being could do that. There's no way you could sing a song one direction and have a different message the other direction. That has to be supernatural. And, of course, it's all into the supernatural, and it's about time people begin to understand the true nature of what's happening to our young people today. They're being drawn into truly satanic music all across America, all across the world. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Joe Schimmel, Pastor Joe Schimmel, and he has a church in Southern California there. Whereabouts is your church, Joe?
I pastor a church in Simi Valley, California.
All right. And that's sort of, that's a little the north part of the valley, isn't it?
Yeah, it's outside, just outside of Los Angeles County, in Simi Valley, called Blessed Hope Chapel. And a lot of people that just love God there and on fire for the Lord.
Well, I think I know that you're certainly going to direct them in the right direction, and I certainly not with this sort of a milquetoast type of religion that is so prevalent today, but really pointing out the true nature of the spiritual battle we're involved in. Well, you were simply talking about Jimi Hendrix. You were talking about certainly the Led Zeppelin, and the fact that one of the, I guess it was one of the guitarists, anyway, who was it who actually bought Aleister Crowley's house
in
Loch Ness?
That was Jimmy Page, the guitarist and leader of Led Zeppelin.
All right.
And over again, I mean, so we're talking about a whole decade of music, and, I mean, from one album to the next, I mean, we spend quite a bit of time just showing Crowley's Satanism throughout Led Zeppelin and their glorification of Crowley. Led Zeppelin's always had a mystique, and a very powerful mystique, driving, you know, hard rock music and so forth. And people to this day, I mean, I talk to youth still. I witness and share the gospel with all different ages, and it's amazing how many young people. One of my daughters goes to a college nearby, and she talks about how it's amazing how many young people are still into Led Zeppelin because they still get a ton of airplay and so forth. Well, it's amazing because we show over and over again. I mean, Lucifer Rising. I mentioned that by Kenneth Anger, the co-founder of Church of Satan. The soundtrack was originally done by Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin. Kenneth Anger got in a big fight with Jimmy Page and ended up not using it. But Page did a lot to encourage, it was subtle to some degree, but he drew a lot of people into Satanism. And their songs were just rebellious. They glorified, of course, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and rebellion against authority and so forth. But what's amazing is when you look at the 70s and you go into the 80s and the 90s, you see much of the same Satanism. I mean, you can think of the biggest artists of the 1980s and 90s, and you think of Michael Jackson and Prince and Sting and David Bowie and many others that were so influential. David Bowie, who's been considered or called the greatest trendsetter in music history because of what he did with disco and punk and glam and all these different types of music, he was basically the main trendsetter. We've got quotes where we even show a song where he's singing about, in his own words, we show him singing, wearing Crowley's uniform, and he sings about the Golden Dawn, and it's interesting because he said...
Hold that stuff right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Pastor Joe Schimmel, and he's simply talking about some of the more popular musicians in the 1980s and 1990s. He was talking about one of them, who was wearing Aleister Crowley's uniform, and was talking about the Golden Dawn. Now, for the people who don't know what the Golden Dawn was, it was one of the secret occult societies, and it was an offshoot of the OTO, which was the organization that Crowley is predominantly associated with. BOT, the Golden Dawn, was simply another one of these secret occult organizations. Pick up the story there.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because in the 80s and 90s, Bowie still having an influence today, but he talked about how he, in interviews, how he was way into Crowleyism, and even said that he believes that that rock music is evil and that it's introducing a very dark age, and he looked at it as a vehicle that Satan is using to introduce the age of Antichrist and so forth. He'd also, by the way, Dr. Stan, David Bowie would also dress up in Nazi uniforms and so forth, so I think we can get a beat as to what kind of man we're dealing with there. Sting, again, one of the biggest pop artists of the 80s and 90s and still very popular among many people today. We show not only where he has a song called Night, where he sings about Every Breath You Take, which was so popular back then, still gets airplay today, and he said, hey, that song, everybody thinks it's a love song, he goes, but really, he laughs in the interview. It says he chuckles exuberantly or laughs exuberantly. He says, really, it's poison. He says, really, it's about, like Orwell's 1984, and so forth. And it's interesting because Sting himself, in one interview, the interviewer says, well, he had a deck of Crowley's tarot cards, and he started talking about it, and Sting said, yeah, I really, and he cuts to the death card, and Sting says, oh, how strange that I would cut to this card. He goes, this is my favorite card, and the death card, you know, and he goes into Crowley being called the Beast and so forth. And it's amazing because your average person, you know, I'd say 99 point whatever amount of people don't have a clue what's going on here with so many of these. In fact, even Michael Jackson, who's been in the news of late, Michael Jackson, who was considered, you know, even bigger than Elvis for his time, we have the same phenomena going on. Michael Jackson says he's a mediator, a career, bringing songs into the world that are given to him in dream states, and that he basically is a messenger. And you look at the lyrics of a lot of his songs, they're pushing, you know, the whole new age movement, the whole new eon, Crowley called it the new eon. And he has a room full of mirrors, he says. And that room full of mirrors, which is all these mirrors, that's where he receives songs from the spiritual world as well, he says. It's interesting. Crowley contacted spirits in a special room full of mirrors as well. And Crowley also encouraged not only listening to music backwards for forth his message, but also walking backwards. The moonwalk is something Michael Jackson made quite popular. I don't even know how much of this is Michael Jackson's conscience of, but it's the same spirit, demonic spirit world at work through these men. And through all these men, you're getting the same message, rebel against authority. There's really no right and wrong and so forth. And the scriptures warn, you know, that in the last days it says difficult times will come. Men will be lovers of self, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truth breakers, cute, you know, it goes on and on. But it says that they'll be without family love. And that's an interesting scripture because Jesus said the love of many would grow cold and lawlessness would increase. Paul said that the Holy Spirit speaks that people would be without family love. What's really tragic is that there's a real attack on the family. And I mentioned earlier that Crowley said that the family is public enemy number one. And we're seeing such an attack on marriage and the family right now. Well, Crowley had a strong emphasis on not only homosexuality, bisexuality, but also he encouraged a pedophilia, or sex with children. And that's where a lot of this is going. That's why I believe what happened in the 80s and 90s, and even happening now with movies to make homosexuality acceptable, I believe more and more there's going to be situations with children, with adults in movies and so forth. And I have no doubt about it because it's already happening. I mean, there's already situations where, you know, they're creating scenarios where, you know, one particular star's husband is reincarnating the child, and it even shows her kissing the child and so forth. And that's really Crowley's ultimate end, is the destruction of innocence. And if they can get to the point, that's what they're going after, is they're going after the total, you know, they want our kids.
We see this in this latest movie, Breakback Mountain, and I'm not haven't seen it, and I have no intention of seeing it, and I hope everybody out there in the audience will boycott that and let any motion picture theater that's showing it, let them know that you're never going to go there again. This is total depravity, and this sort of a program, I will not describe what is shown there in vivid technicolor, but let me tell you, it is so crass that in any other society, they would arrest the people who put that out. But, of course, in America, why, it's freedom of the press. No, it's not freedom of the press. The whole idea of expression has to have some limitations. And our Constitution did not give a license for moral anarchy. We were to have local standards, both state and community standards. It wasn't until the Masons on the Supreme Court centralized all power in Washington, D.C., and took away from the local community the ability to regulate morality that we got to where we are today. That film should be banned in every community across America. And then I've talked to people who have seen it, and they will tell you it is totally depraved. And this is what they're pushing on our children today.
Well, no doubt about it. I mean, here we have this cry of, hey, if you're against allowing us, you know, you speak out against, you know, showing these kinds of things and our glorification of homosexuality and so forth, you know, that censorship. But isn't it amazing that you have groups like the ACLU who cry foul if you speak out against, you know, that which glorifies the destruction of the family and so forth. And that which is unhealthy, by the way. I mean, the average homosexual tragically lives between 39 and 42, the male homosexual, and the female homosexual to about 46 to 49. And that's without AIDS with the male homosexual. And if we put on the on our cigarette packages, you know, the Surgeon General has determined that this is, you know, is bad for your health and cause cancer, you're far more at risk dying of dying young and dying a horrible death because of homosexuality. If we really care for people, we really love them, we'll encourage them that they've been made in the image of God and their bodies are made and designed for purpose, and it's for procreation. And it's not even biologically logical that two men would be together or two women. And what's tragic, too, just today, you know, you probably saw the story, Dr. Stan, John E. Jones, you know, ruled, you know, a court district judge over there in Pennsylvania ruled against intelligent design and overthrew what the school council and the school district had determined and said it's unlawful. Now, we talk about censorship, you know, the censorship that's going on in the ACLU is a big part of that, is censoring God from the public square.
And basically what the decision was that you could not mention intelligent design in school. I mean, it's all right to have, you know, frank demonstrations of homosexual sexual activity on the screen. That's perfectly all right. But don't you dare mention intelligent design in school. What sort of censorship is that? Well, it's all part of this conspiracy against God. When you understand this conspiracy against God, everything makes sense.
Right. Oh, it's the Bible and then, you know, prayer and then even mention of God and then even moments of silence was ruled out. It's amazing, too, because Darwin himself was, you know, he was very close, his bulldog, because he was so sickly. You know, Thomas, actually, you got Huxley, Alice Huxley, Julian Huxley, and Thomas Huxley. Thomas Huxley was the grandfather, but he was Darwin's bulldog. In a letter to him, you know, a couple of his letters, when you read Darwin's letters, you start to see something sinister going on. In fact, just before Origin of the Species was published, you have... Thank you.
Thank you.